How can I help people feel more free? How can I help people feel more connected to their potential? How can I do that more often? Well, that requires me to connect with more people. That requires me to get over my own shit and connect with a wide variety of people who have different beliefs, different ways of doing things. Connect with them at a human level.
This can't be it. There has to be more. Wait, am I crazy? No. If you're yearning for more and working hard to make your dreams a reality, then you're in the right place. Welcome to Dreamcatchers. It's the only show committed to helping you self-actualize and then transcend, leaving you with the legacy you've always desired. Listen in on conversations with successful philanthropists, entrepreneurs, and founders every week as we connect with them for inspiration, education, and direction. Your host, Jerome Myers, is here to help you exit the matrix and transform into a leader of your own revolution. The question is, do you believe your dreams should be real? Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Dreamcatchers podcast. I'm your host, Jerome, and we have another international guest for you guys. I guess I should say you guys and gals this week. We went up to Ontario, Canada to find my man, Faisal Insan. Did I get it right?
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Close enough, man. I'm sorry about that. But so let's go there, right? I've never seen the word Insan before. So can you break down, is that like your birth given name? Like how did we get there? And like, what does it mean?
Yeah, so I'll share it in terms of a story. So this was a few years back, about I think 5 years or 4 years back. And I was at this conference, and one of my close friends, Lisa, if you're watching this, she knows that she's a coach as well. And at the time, we were at this coaching certification, and we used to go there together. And we would we'd be in the same hotel, and we would walk a lot because we both like walking and talking. So the few certifications that we went to, we would do that. And we were walking back. It was, I think it was in San Diego, so it was beautiful there. It was right by the water. We would walk back. It was, I think, one of the last days of the certification. Usually you get a lot of insights in these kind of spaces. The connections that you make, the depth that's there is incredible. And we were just walking towards the hotel. We were getting close to it, and I could see the water. And I had this funny thought in my mind. And I was like, you know, it would be funny because I kept talking about humanity and why it matters to me, like why it matters for me to get people connected to their dreams. Why it matters to me to create a community or communities and help people go in the positive direction, how that's connected to my story. Like, it would be funny if my name was Insan, and I kind of joked around with it. I'm like, if I gave that to my best friend, he would just call me insane if I spell it a certain way. Thank you. That's my daughter. I got breakfast. So we were talking about it. It was just kind of a funny thought. And Cheryl there, she's like, that's a pretty cool idea. I'm like, it is? And it's one of those things, like, I don't know, I might sound crazy to this person. She's like, yeah, it's pretty cool. You talk about this stuff a lot. It connects to who you are. It's very symbolic. And it sounds like a cool name. And the word Insan just means human. And then as she said, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I let her go at that point. So I come home a week into it. I can't get the thought out of my mind. I'm like, this is going to sound crazy. But I go to my wife, I share it with her. And she's like, at this point, she's used to weird things for me. So she's like, your family's going to kill you, but it sounds pretty cool. And this is what I mean by it, because like for an average person, if they change their last name, it might not mean that much. But I come from a place, I was born in Afghanistan, and a lot of like your last name is connected to your lineage, and it goes connects to your tribe, and it goes like you can go generations out and you know where you came from. So people usually know you by your last name. So it's not like an average last name. Like if you have a last name, they know where your lineage takes you to. And it was funny because around the time when I changed my last name, somebody from my culture is like, why'd you change your last name? Why are you not? Like, I knew it was going to come. But I'm like, thought about it. And I still stayed with it. It took me a few weeks to make a decision. But I was like, you know what? I think this is important to me. And I changed it. I told my parents afterwards. And it was a huge hullabaloo over it. It's like, why would you do that? And everybody was kind of trying to talk me out of it. And I had all sorts of reasons, but I remember I was talking to my sister-in-law. I was like in a group chat and she was trying to say a lot of things around this. I'm like, you know what? At the end of it, I was like, I can give you all sorts of reasons that might or might not make sense, but I just intuitively know that this is important to me. And so I ended up changing it. Here are some interesting things happened afterwards. So first of all, nobody has this name. So if you, and this was not the reason, the reason was not marketing for me. Like I just, if you search Faisal and San, nobody else would show up on the internet because there are no last names that are like that, even in my culture. Another interesting thing happened going into immigration. So before this change of name, I used to get held up for long, long periods. I've actually been arrested as well going through the border, like put in detention because of my name. And that wasn't the reason why I changed it, but it was funny. The first time I go into the U.S. immigration and I have the new passport with the new name. And I have the old passport with me just in case they hold me. It's like, what the hell is this? It's like, now you're changing names on us? We already thought you were a suspicious character. So I go there. He looks at it. He's like, have a good day, sir. I was like, this has never happened. I almost turned around and said, are you sure? And then this happened the second time, the third time. Since then, nobody has ever stopped me. I'm just saying these are odd things that have happened. And I don't know, it's just one of those things that felt connected to my heart and I went with it.
Wow. So that level of conviction to do something like that, I mean, some people would say you're severing your tie to your homeland and you're cutting yourself off from your family and starting a new journey. Did your wife and children change their name too, or just you?
Yeah, my children have my last name. My wife is in the process of changing her name. Because she has a UK passport. She grew up in Scotland and she's in the process of getting, because she had some trouble doing that. But she's in the process of changing it too. So it's more of a family value than it is just my thing. So yeah, she's changing her last name too. So you're starting
just something completely new. I mean, it's profound because I think there is a lot in a name. And yeah. I mean, for the folks who are parents out there listening, I think there's a lot of time and energy spent in not only the child's name, but in the spelling of the child's name and the thought that the surname, the one that is the family name, could be changed just seems outlandish. But I think it opened up doors and probably creates some opportunities in a way that you anticipated and some other ways that you didn't.
Yeah, and I can tell some people might think that you're severing ties, but I look at it a little bit differently when it comes to culture and our origin. Like, there's no way I can sever ties with my lineage. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, that's part of my DNA. That's part of my thinking process. And a big part of who I am comes from that. And it goes back to generations. But there's this thing I learned from my mentor as well, is that we live at different levels of consciousness. We all start with, like, when we're born in a family, like we have a singular, actually it's very interesting. So going back, like, some of the best philosophers who've thought about this and psychologists who've thought about this, when they look at children, they suspect more so, it's not fully proven, but they suspect that they have a more of we call an oceanic consciousness. Or cosmic or universal consciousness. It means that they look at everything as a part of themselves. So they will move towards everything until their environment, the stimulus tells them nothing. So they'll touch the hot thing, they will go towards a stranger, they'll do whatever because they think everything is an aspect of themselves. Over time, the environment teaches them you go towards certain things, you don't go towards other things, and their family, community, all that stuff. But then as you go through that, you start with whatever your family teaches you within that culture. You have a family consciousness, then you have a cultural consciousness, then you have a national consciousness. Now we live in the world that we live in. There are different nationalities. But then as you become more and more aware, that awareness expands, then you have a worldview that might encompass all of Earth, maybe all of humanity, maybe over the span of history. And for me, what my transformation, the way it's happened, is that human beings are very alike all around the world. our needs are exactly the same. Our emotions are the same. Our thoughts, the funny things that we do are the same. The weird little things that we have, quirks that we have, are the same all around the world. The things that differ are the strategies with which we meet these needs and these express these emotions and express different amazing creative ways of putting that out in the world in the forms of different cultures, religions, ways of doing things. But at the core, when you're looking at us, we are human beings. And I work with people from all around the world. And you'd be shocked how much similarity there is between people than not. No matter how much they've convinced themselves politically, ideologically, religiously, or culturally that they're different. And to me, it's that my transformation is a transformation in my consciousness. And what I want to pass on is that we're all in the same boat. Let's try to support each other. Let's try to bring more joy. Let's try to help each other understand that we're living in a very complex world where everybody's trying to find a way to get along. And we're not doing a very good job of it right now. and maybe the next generation, the defining factor will be is that how do they find a way to connect and get along with people who think differently, believe different things, and find ways of finding common ground. And unless we can do that, we're not going in the right direction. That's just how I'm looking at it. And for me, it's been just a natural transition towards that, because the more I've tried to develop awareness around this, the more it keeps going back to that. Well, as an individual, as a community, as a group, how do we evolve to connect with each other? How do we learn to do that? And most of human history has been that, is how do we find a way to come together and find commonalities that support each other versus destroy each other.
Why do you think connection is so important?
I would say it's been a huge realization for me that I used to think freedom was my highest value, but connection is my highest value. But in general, and it was very interesting because it came from coaching sessions when I was going through them myself. And but aside from me, like just looking at human beings in their core, like what are we hardwired to do? We're hardwired to connect. Why? Because we're a social species. We see each other in relation. We see ourselves in relation to each other. Like think about the roles that we have. We're a parent. We're a husband. We're a wife. We're a community leader. Our thinking is around those things. We're a business owner. What do you do in business? It's in relation to your clients, your collaborators. Everything that we do, every role that we are in, is in relation to somebody or someone in our life. Actually, a lot of our identity starts to dissipate or disappear as soon as we take these roles out of the picture. There are deeper identities, or I wouldn't say identity, there is a deeper experience of consciousness, which I would call a spiritual experience, which is outside of these roles. But in our day-to-day life, everything that we do is related to these roles. And what do? We find a sense of connection with these roles. And if we can feel connected in all these roles, we usually have a fairly good quality of life. If we feel connected to our kids, if we feel connected to our family, our spouse, our business partners, our collaborators, our clients, if we're adding value, if we feel like we're contributing, we usually have a higher quality of thinking and feeling. If we feel like those things are not going very well, the quality of thinking and feeling starts to go downhill. And I see that in day-to-day lives of my clients. That's what they say. Most people struggle with relationships more than anything else, relationship with themselves and others.
So that's interesting, because I think most people feel like they can compartmentalize that and show up and do the thing. Do you think that's real?
Yeah, it's real. And it's very interesting. The human mind is able to compartmentalize a lot of things. We learned that early on as children. So for example, and in this, our system is fairly intelligent when it comes to that. So for example, think about this scenario. There's a little girl or boy who's looking forward to seeing his or her dad, who's come from a long day of work. And the dad is frustrated. Business is not going well. All sorts of things happen throughout the day. The kid does not know. The kid is only in his or her little world. She's just excited to see her dad. And the dad comes in, opens the door, and the kid just goes running and excited to see dad. And he has grocery bags or something. He just like goes all over. He's like, give me a minute to put myself together. The dad yells. And the kid looks completely overwhelmed, not knowing what just happened, confused, disconnected, rejected by the very source where he or she feels connected to and sees life through. And Now, to the dad, like, obviously the dad cares about the child, but he has a very different experience of life. So what happens to that kid? And we understand enough about child psychology to know is that the kid in that moment does not have the tools to process that yet, does not have the experience to process that. And usually kids tend to make that about themselves because their world is really small and they think that something is off about them. Well, why did dad say that? There must be something wrong with what I did and what I was. It had nothing to do with the kid. That had just a bad day. And if it was an adult, I'd be like, oh, okay, I need to give this person some space. But if it's a kid, kid goes and doesn't know how to process it. System is overwhelmed. Too many emotions, big emotions in there. So what the system does for the child to be functional, compartmentalizes. And because we're human beings, it knows that at some point, somebody should be ideally supporting this kid to process that emotion. It puts it aside. So somebody can support this kid, ideally parents, but also the family, the tribe, the community. Here's the problem. It doesn't happen. And on top of that, multiple incidences like that happen in our life where we feel disconnected. And in the words of Dr. Gabor Mate, these are called small T trauma. Not the big T trauma where we get abused physically or emotionally, but these are like small T trauma when we don't feel like our parents are present with us or the people in our life care about us. Or that we matter in some way to them or not. And these little T traumas build up in our system and we compartmentalize them. And usually these are emotional in nature. And because they're too much to handle for our system, they get compartmentalized. And over time, as adults, we're walking, talking time bombs. And we don't know as adults how to process them because we never learned them. And there are thousands of these compartmentalized components of us, like hidden in our system. And where does it show up? We have a team meeting. Somebody says something, triggers a moment from our past. We lose our shit. It has nothing to do with that moment. We're stuck in the past. Nobody taught us. So what we do is we've trained ourselves to get to compartmentalize all sorts of things. Thoughts, usually they're emotional in nature, but they're connected to thoughts, visuals, so many things. And we don't have the awareness to process them. And I see this in my clients that it's very easy for people to shove aside in the name of being an adult. But the problem is they're not able to. It looks like they're functional, but they're not. They get depressed in their own life because they don't know what that stuff means. And the way most people deal with them is they go towards things that would distract them from those painful aspects of them. Well, how do the people distract? Well, let's take a list survey. Drugs, alcohol, social media, shopping, the thirst for power, for money, anything you bring. Like it's not the thing itself. It's our own addictive nature because we haven't dealt with a bunch of stuff that we need to deal with. And that's including me because I've gone through this in my life. I'm aware of it.
You know, what's most interesting about what you said. So what you call distract, I call numb. And I feel like they're numbing the pain. They're numbing the highs. They're numbing the lows.
Yeah.
And they think they're just numbing the lows. And they don't realize that they can't numb the low without numbing the high because it contracts the band that they're able to.
I completely agree. Yeah. You can't pick and choose which emotions you're going to feel more. So if you don't feel the depth of the other spectrum of emotions, like your fears, pains, and angers and frustrations, you can't feel your joy and connection and happiness, the other ones either. Emotions are in a spectrum. And like you said, that contracts everything.
So let's go to the other place, because you said something that was really profound. And I was like, man, can I just let that go, or do we have to go? And like, we're going to put our scuba diving mask on now, because this is
deep. I love that.
You said freedom, I thought, was my most important value, but a connection is truly the most important value. How'd you come to that realization?
Yeah, I think I spent a very big part of my life, I'd say the first 30 years of my life, repressing and suppressing what really mattered to me. And I never acknowledged my emotions until I was forced to, until I was at the brink of addictions, at the brink of depression, at the brink of suicidal stuff. And then my own system forced me to face a lot of that stuff. And then it wasn't until much later, and this is like late 20s, early 30s, when I was beginning to acknowledge all this stuff. And I realized that I was caged in so many ways. I was free physically, but I was caged in my own mind and my own consciousness. The bars around me were not visible, but they were tangible. They were real. I couldn't think outside of that box. I couldn't feel outside of that box, outside of that cage. And it was a painful process. And the bars were in the form of beliefs. The bars were in the form of repressed emotions. The bars were in the form of suppressed desires. The bars were in the form of unacknowledged aspects of myself. The bars were in the form of not being able to express myself the way that mattered to me. The bars were in the form of not being able to be confident and connected to myself, that I am a contributing member of the world and I want to contribute in the way that matters to me, but not even knowing what that means. And I had been spending a lot of time trying to figure that out. And I'm still on that quest, by the way. That's a lifelong journey. For me, at least it is. And for many people, it is. And so a lot of my freedom came from understanding those things and experiencing different aspects of myself that I couldn't before, and slowly starting to open up breaking down that metaphorical prison that I was in, that cage that I was in. And as the bars started coming down, it was interesting. I had this dream of creating a life of freedom, and I did. And at this point, I travel the world with my family. I work from wherever I want. I do mostly what I want within reason. But I realized that that's not what I was seeking. Like, those are good things to have, but it was actually most of freedom was internal in nature. And that need, as soon as I acknowledged those things, that need was very met very quickly. And that's why when I talk about freedom, I don't just talk about the external freedom. Yeah, it's important to have resource freedom. It's important to have location freedom. It's important to have time freedom. But if you don't have an internal consciousness freedom, you will feel caged in your life. You will be depressed. You will be disconnected. You will be all sorts of things. But then the reason why, when I started, started going deeper into these things, I realized, like, what was I seeking? When all my needs were met, what was I seeking? And this has come up so much this year, because there's been a lot of progress in my business and in my life, and I've been able to contribute in the way that I wanted to for a while. And I still remember this event that I came from. I was telling my wife, I feel full. I feel like all my needs are met. It's like the only direction I can go from here is to serve. The only direction it can go is to overflow, whether it's love or it's service or connection or whatever it is. It will show up in different ways, but that's the only direction I can see myself going in. And what that kind of made me go towards more and more is that, how can I connect? How can I help people feel more free? How can I help people feel more connected to their potential? How can I do that more often? Well, that requires me to connect with more people. That requires me to get over my own shit and connect with a wide variety of people who have different beliefs, different ways of doing things. Connect with them at a human level, regardless of who they are, what they believe, what they do, and get down to what really matters to them. Because most of what people say that matters to them, it doesn't matter to them. They're just repeating things that they were told that they should repeat things, whether it's political, religious, societal, social, or even related to their own life, career, anything. They're all very surface things. When you get down to what matters to people and their needs and their dreams and all that stuff, their emotions, you find a whole different dimension of people. That's where you start to see the genius of people. That's where you start to see the amazing, unique parts of human beings. Every psychoanalyst, every psychologist, every coach knows this. As you go deeper, you find these weird things that people have they never shared with other people. Like, they are at the surface, they're like a carbon copy of everybody because that's a safe thing to do. But deep down, they're very unique in their own little ways. They have these little quirks, a little way of doing things, a little ways of coming up with ideas that they will never share with anybody. A lot of times they won't even acknowledge it to themselves because it would make them feel too much tension in their environment. But when you find that out, then people find better ways of communicating with other people and connecting with others, and they find better ways of contributing, especially in the world that we live in, where we have a lot of resources to do stuff like that. So that's what kind of got me towards connections. Like, I love connection much more than that, because we can do a lot with connection.
A lot of people want to unlock their ultimate potential but lack the strategy, support, and stamina necessary to achieve their major goals. They often try to overcome these challenges by trying to do it on their own, causing frustration, fatigue, and eventually failure. We have developed a model for a center life, aka the red pill, to help them bolster their beliefs, gain clarity on their path to success, and provide accountability as they take action on their goals. When they take the red pill, they rapidly accelerate attainment of their goals and begin to experience a life of significance and impact. Want to find out more? Hop over to JeromeMyers.co. Now, let's get back to the episode.
So you've brought up consciousness a few times, and then you hinted at the programming that so many people experience. So is consciousness and programming different?
Well, it depends how we define it. But I mean, when I look at, you can define consciousness in all sorts of ways. But the way I look at it is that what makes us aware, our awareness is consciousness. Even neuroscientists are beginning to understand is that if there's anything real, it's our consciousness. They are not even sure if the world is real. It might be a projection of our own consciousness. And same thing, like Buddhists used to say that for a long time, in every spiritual tradition, is that everything is an illusion. It's an illusion of your own perception, and your perception comes from your consciousness, but they would connect it to your soul. And you might even go to length to figure out to kind of project it that consciousness might be your soul. We don't know how tangibly that works in like universal physical sense or energetic sense, because we don't understand it fully. But I ascribe consciousness to the basic foundation of what we're aware of. And it's not just at the level of conscious, it's at a level of subconscious and unconscious. So if you followed any work from Carl Jung, is one of my favorite psychologists, and one of my favorite books from him, two books I love, is one is Psychology and Religion. The other one is Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. It's his autobiography. And it's one of the most interesting books. It was kind of recommended by the philosopher Alan Watts, and I read it. I'm like, oh my God. Here's a doctor, a clinical psychologist. He was exploring everything from the influence of religion, culture on us. And this is the time we're talking about 1930s to 70s or something. Like, these are very turbulent times during world wars, Europe going through all sorts of stuff. And he was gathering a lot of perspectives, and he was living in a Christian world, and he was trying to make sense of his world, but he was looking at it from a philosophical and metaphysical and psychoanalytic perspective. And what he really, as he talked about it more and more, what he discovered was that there are different levels of consciousness that we have, and most people live at the level of subconscious, which is our automatic processes, and that's where we call our program. So it means that the first few years that, for example, a human child living in any culture, in any family, the first few years is the programming period. And it's actually, Dr. Noah Harari in his book Sapiens talks about it, is that human beings are more like molten glass. Like, we have the ability to be molded in so many different ways, versus another animal that might break if you mold it too much, because they have more physical needs versus psychological. And these our psychology is very flexible. So a human child, the first seven years of his or her life is the period where they're, Dr. Bruce Lipton says that we are in theta state. So it's the same state that you would be if you were under hypnosis, where your conscious mind is out of the way. You will believe anything. Anything that's given to you, you will believe it. You will take it in with no question whatsoever. And children will look at anything. Like, you give them Santa Claus or fairies or unicorns or Nazi propaganda, they will take whatever. And they will make it as part of them. That doesn't mean that's what they believe. That's just that's their adaption process, that they need to adapt quickly to the human life, to that tribe, so they can grow and thrive with it. That's very natural and very powerful. Now, the problem is that as we live in a world, like, if that human being was living in a tribe and or in a small community, and that's what everybody believed, the same thing, would be just fine, would be normal, that child would grow and thrive in that environment. But now we're living in a world with conflicting visions, thoughts, processes, beliefs, and the child gets out and is like, what the fish do I believe? And it's confusing. Confusing, right? We live in a very confusing world right now. This has never been the case. Jim Quick from Limitless, he talks about it, is that we are exposed to more information in a year in this world compared to somebody in the Middle Ages in a lifetime. that's a huge amount of information. Everybody's under information overload, and nobody knows how to make sense of that information. And on top of that, we have this programming that tells us something specific to believe, and it doesn't connect to other things that other people are saying. And no wonder people are depressed. No wonder people are disconnected, because they don't know what to do. They would rather numb their pain than deal with it, because it's too much. I did that. And so now the deeper levels of consciousness that Carl Jung went into is the unconscious, which we in the spiritual world, we call the soul world, the spiritual world. And he was talking about it. This is where our consciousness connects with each other, whether it's human consciousness or everything probably on earth and universe at multiple levels. You go deeper, is that we have a deeper level of consciousness that brings the knowledge, information, and so many aspects of cultures that have long gone or that are here, and they're all a part of us. And this is why, like at this point, I've realized even the cultures who are gone, they leave behind so much within us, within our DNA, and it stays with us. And it shows up in different places based on whatever we need in different groups and different, like there's a huge revival of, for example, spiritual world, like the awareness, consciousness is becoming a very dominant thing. For a while, it wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Why is it coming back? Because there's a need for it. Where did they come from? These came from ancient cultures that most people don't know anything about, but it's within our consciousness. It's within the memory of our collective, spiritual, whatever you want to call it. We don't fully understand it, but I think it's there. And that's where we talk about intuition. That's where we talk about other things that we can't explain, but we know that it's right. It's true. It's like we know something is real, but we can't explain it. And we do it. I'm like, oh, I love that I did that. I couldn't explain it, but and this is where dreams come in. For example, I didn't know I was going to be on this path, but there was something inside of me. It was like, this is important to you, no matter what the hardships are. This is important to you. Don't let it go. Everybody has that inside of them. It's just that they ignore it. They numb it down along with everything else that they numbed out.
So are you suggesting that it wasn't just easy and everything worked as you expected it to work or dreamed that it would work?
Oh, I never said that it was easy. And so the my mentor, Brendon Burchard, he would say is that we never said that it would be easy. We just said that it would help you grow. And the path is that of growth. It's not, the promise is not that it would get easier or the path is easy. But the promise is more that it will help you connect to who you are deep down, and it will help you build the resiliency, the strength, the wisdom to deal with whatever is to come. I mean, life is not meant to be an easy thing. Like every day, like, I mean, every day I talk to clients, like they have a death in the family, they have illness, they have like all of a sudden, like they spent the past 4 years building their business. Now they're multimillionaires and they have so much abundance in their life. All of a sudden they get the news that their 9-year-old daughter has cancer. Would you consider that easy? Of course, that's not easy. That's heartbreaking thing. Like if you're a parent, like my kids had cold last week and my heart was breaking. Now somebody has cancer. How do you deal with that? Like nobody knows how to deal with that. But then a lot of it is you connected the natural aspects of life where you expect death, you expect illness, you expect tragedy, but you also expect joy, you expect connection, you expect an experience that is valuable. You connect to the present moment and what matters to you. You don't avoid problems, you don't numb it down, you become open to what life has to offer. There's this idea of life where you, when you make it, you're going on these, like life is daisies and fields of meadows, and you're on your yacht. I talked to a lot of people who are on their yachts and private jets and all that stuff, and they're miserable. Some of them. Some of them are very happy. Some of them are. It's not the jets and the yachts and the houses that they have. It's the quality of their inner and outer experience. And that needs to be cultivated. That requires a lot of work. That requires a lot of growth. And we've been given this illusion that just because you create the external things, you will get the quality that you want. You will get the growth that you want. No, not necessarily.
Not necessary. So what does get us to the place where we get the thing?
Sorry, you got what does get us to?
What gets us to the place where we get the thing? Because you said it's not guaranteed if you create money. So is there a thing that if you actually get it or achieve it, that you get this thing that we're hoping to have or achieve? Experience maybe is probably a better word.
Yeah. So I'll give a caveat to all this. I hope everybody listening has kind of picked up something, at least to what I've alluded. I look at life as an experiment. to be honest. A lot of the shit that I'm saying might be true right now. It might not be true 3 days from now on. So listen to me, not from an expert point of view, but from somebody who is going to help you think a little about your life. And so far, what I've been able to figure out, there are a lot of things that I don't know. But the few little things that I've been able to figure out is that life is a dance between our internal and external experience. And they both need to be worked on. Some people will say, well, no, I'm going to go on this hilltop and be a monk and I'll be away from people. And that's an experience. You can choose to do that. There's nothing wrong with that. And I've been attracted to something like that. And maybe I will at some point. But when you look at life, there are reasons why the way things have gone around. There are people around you that consistently make you face so many aspects of yourself. For example, if you've ever been in an intimate relationship, after you go through the honeymoon period, you're looking at the other person, why the hell am I with this person? But then it's very easy to move off of it. But then what is this person teaching me about me? What am I seeing in that person that's so triggering to me? And as soon as you notice them, that person becomes your biggest teacher in life. You look at your enemy, the person that you call your enemy, the group that you call your enemy. What is it in that group, in that person that really incites something within you? That becomes your biggest teacher in life. This was ancient wisdom. A lot of people, people used to go in war, they had respect for their enemies for that reason, because their enemies were teaching them a lot about life. It was a part of the spiritual tradition. Now we have these like divisions between like, oh, don't go to war, peace, everything, but everybody's fighting within themselves. But that wasn't the case for a long time. So what I've been able to gather is that this dance between the internal and external world shows up everywhere, is that the challenge is that we live in a world where we're taught to focus on the external world. We're taught to focus on the job, on the money, because those are the things that even our adults know to do. Like, and this was a very odd thing for me when I started talking to professors, scientists, engineers, politicians. When I started working with them, I'm like, these guys must know what they're doing. So let me have I'm like, they're scholars, they're scientists. And I'm getting this as I go deeper past the thing that they are very skilled in, like their own specific field. You go a little bit deeper, it's like, why the fuck am I listening to this person? Sorry, I don't know. You can edit that out. Like, they have all sorts of shit that they've shoved down. They have all sorts of fear, biases, disconnections, hatreds, just like every other human being. And that's why Steve Jobs, somebody who said that, is like, the world is run by people who are no more smarter than you and I. And we look up to these people, but they're just average human beings. They've just figured out a couple of skill sets that puts them on the top of the food chain. But they're also influencing a group of people who are not aware that these are human beings. They make a lot of mistakes. They don't know a lot of shit. We figure that out with our parents pretty quickly. When we become an adult, I'm like, they fucked up. But we will screw up too, just like our parents, because we're human beings, right? But then so our teachers, our parents, our politicians, they just teach us what they were taught. Like, we don't need to blame anybody. They just teach us whatever is easy for them. Like, if you were to go to a professor or a teacher and you look at them in the eye, it's like, is your life fulfilling? Is your life joyful? Are you connected to money? Like, it would be rare that you would get answers like that. I've had one professor who had so much joy and connection. He inspired me in so many ways. He was my psychology professor, interestingly, because he studied the different parts of himself. But most people will teach you things. Adults pass on things just as this habit, because we subconsciously do it. But that doesn't mean that that thing that they're passing on is effective or that actually works. Parts of it will work. A big part of it won't. This is where questioning things comes in. So we've been all like, our common sense is geared towards doing things for external reasons. But then as you actually look at human life, a lot of our misery, disconnection, or a lot of our lack of fulfillment of purpose comes from this education that gets us to focus on the external world. But a lot of these things are in the internal world. It's in the place of, how do we manage our thoughts? How do we buy into our beliefs and thinking that's given to us? How do we manage our emotions? How much depth have we created spiritually in our consciousness? how do we connect with the deeper parts of ourselves? Do we know a side of ourselves that does not get influenced by these other things that are in our environment, the surface things? What are the values that really connects us to other people? Are they just cultural values that were given to us? Or are they just the things that are close to us? And all that stuff requires a lot of self-reflection. It requires a lot of tools to work through them. It requires a level of deeper dialogue, which comes from things like coaching. It comes from things like philosophical dialogue, which comes from things understanding the metaphysical, having a metaphysical awareness, which comes from having a bigger perspective, which comes from being exposed to different things, different experiences. And most people don't have that, and they're not encouraged to pursue that. What we're encouraged to pursue is the next job, the next promotion, the next relationship. Those things are all good in that context, but what's the quality that you're bringing? Because in every context, you're going to bring yourself into that picture. And who is that self that's showing up? And I think focusing more on the inner world and also looking at the external world as that there's a connection between the two can really help us grow. And that requires that you, I mean, simple things can help, like start reading books, start spending time alone. Start getting support for the things that you've suppressed or things that you've repressed that you're not even aware of. Start getting coaching. Start being around people who talk about deeper things or who are building things, who are purposeful. Like these things, just simple things like that can help you. But your own little environment that you grew up in, your own little comfort area will not help you grow, unfortunately. And most people are stuck in that environment, their environment of beliefs, their environment of thinking, their local world that they grew up in, the same people that they interact with who will think the same thing for the next 30 years. So unless you're kind of moving off of that and finding your path, your inner path, you probably don't know who you are. In the words of Socrates, I'll just quote him saying that, if I remember the quote, I love this quote, but I'm slipping my mind. It completely slipped my mind. That goes my profound moment.
No, I think it'll come back. It gives me an opportunity to jump in because I remember specifically being in a session with a client and saying, you don't know who you are. And it was offensive for her. It was very offensive, but I could see parts and pieces of her that I don't even know if she was aware were impacting her and holding her back, or her not accepting that she had these special talents and unique gifts and wasn't actually harnessing them to create the life that she wanted to create. And so I think what you're offering to us is very profound. The task to go find out who you are and not who other people told you to be, because it's very easy for us to accept that identity. The identity that's placed on us by other people that say they want the best for us, but maybe they're just trying to get us to repeat the things that they've done for the people who want to protect us so we don't experience any pain, even though that's a part of growth. And I can continue to go down the list of all of the well-meaning, well-intentioned things that folks do that in the end, I think, end up being a negative impact on our life when you look at the overall impact. So, you know, some people out there may be listening, scratching their head and asking, well, how do I find out who I am who I am isn't the person I've been? And I think it's a real opportunity for folks to dig in and go really deep and start to pull off the calluses and some of the other things that we do in order to bury the pain and the discomfort.
Yeah. Well, I love that challenge statement that you gave to your client. You don't know who you are, even if they were offended. That's a profound statement to hear from somebody, because often that shocks you. And I think one of the most useful things in conversations is that we need to shock people, because most people are so stuck in their own routines of thinking and feeling and doing that they'll just continue that on until their body, like Dr. Gabor Mate wrote this book, When the Body Says No, when some illness comes up, which is not random, which is related to their emotions, which is related to so many things that they've gone through, until their own system stops them. And that same thing happened to me. I was damaging my own system. I was damaging my own relationships. I was addicted to so many things. I was disconnected. I was depressed. I was suicidal. But I was very good at being a functional adult. There are a lot of people walking around like that. And that's not healthy for them, for their family, for their society. you can give all sorts of information and so-called education to give them skill sets. That does not solve our problems.
No, the application of that against a specific problem can solve a lot of problems, but having the information, knowing and doing are not the same thing. And I think so many people skip that. And I think it's why people buy all the products, put them on the shelf, never read them, or download the book and don't listen to it. They think the transaction is the thing that makes the difference. And the transaction is only, from my perspective, an allocation of a resource that you have. And depending on where you sit in the world, it may be your most important resource to you, even though it's not the only one that's not renewable. And so, I think the point is profound.
I work with investors a lot, and I know there might be investors listening to this, people who are well off enough to kind of think about like capital raising, investing, or putting their money somewhere. And I always say is like your biggest investment is yourself. Like it starts with you. Like there's nothing will give you more of an ROI than understanding yourself, because that has a compound effect, an exponential effect on your life. Because what it tends to do is it makes you show up a certain way as a leader. It makes you show up a certain way as a husband, as a wife, as a son, as a daughter, as a citizen that you cannot replace with any kind of external investments, because it changes the quality of how you interact with people, whether it's in business transactions or it's in your personal life. And that's why I work, even though I work with a lot of people who are in business and mostly in business and entrepreneurs, you know, what I help them do is discover, like you said, who they are in the picture. Because once they figure that out, then everything else becomes much simpler, not easier, much simpler to work through.
Becomes simpler because you've cut away all of the things that aren't actually making a meaningful impact. Simplicity and clarity are the game if you want to make progress.
I spend a huge amount, I have a webinar happening today, one next week. And I always start with clients. I want to know their vision. I want to know what deeply matters to them. Their vision comprises of things that they're creating. A lot of people focus on that, but who they're becoming in the process, how they're seeing their contributions to be in that ideal life they're creating. And it takes them deep down. I want them to go into the rabbit hole of the things that they haven't acknowledged. And then I walk them through an experience for them to actually experientially see what that is. And a lot of times when people go through an experience like that, they're like dumbfounded. They will just sit there. They're in shock. They're like, what is that? And because they were always thinking about goals, and usually people's goals are connected to what they were told they should be, or they picked it up somewhere. It has nothing to do with them. And they heard something that looks nice, feels nice, but that's not who they are. That's not their path. And this gaining clarity and the depth of clarity can really transform the direction that you go in your life. And that doesn't happen in your day-to-day things that you do. You need to take yourself outside of your day-to-day things, whether that takes the form of a coaching program, or that takes the form of you go out and travel, live in a different part of the world, and see how people are doing things. Shock your system, because it's nothing like you. You might think that what you're doing is normal. It's not that. And start to self-reflect, start to spend time alone, and you will notice that your thoughts are very hard to live with. Your emotions are very hard to live with. Don't distract yourself. You'll find out that the hardest thing to do is spend time alone. And if you, and there was somebody who said that the most dangerous and most powerful person is somebody who can spend time alone, because they are somebody who can conquer their own fears, who can conquer their own self-doubts, who can conquer their own demons and dragons. And if you can do that, the world is as difficult as it is to navigate the world. It's not that difficult.
It is not. Well, man, time has flown by. I'd love to ask you the question that I ask every guest to kind of wrap this thing up and put a bow on it. And that question is, what's the gift that you're giving to the world?
I think the gift that I'm giving to the world is awareness more than anything else. The depth of awareness. And second to that is the gift of being able to connect with their own family, with their own community, with their own world. And I think those two things, once you develop awareness in who you are and your potential and your dreams, and you're able to connect with others, most of your problems are solved. And not only that, you become the contributor in the world, because you become somebody who's a leader who builds organizations, who builds families, who builds communities, who builds future of the world that we're in.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it from the dream catcher himself. Faisal, this was an awesome interview. We dove deep. We talked energy. We talked consciousness. We talked finding out who you are. We talked about solitude and the ability to go deep and really uncover and feel the things that we're experiencing. And I don't think most people understand how much of a gift that is. So thank you for bringing that to our community.
It's been an honor. And I'll thank you for giving me the space to do that. And thank you for your presence. And I can already tell you're a deep coach, because you have the deeper listening skills. That's a rare gift. So thank you for giving me that space.
And I appreciate that. To the listeners, your dreams should be real. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for joining the tribe today. We would love to hear from you. Please don't forget to rate, like, and share. Perhaps someone you know could benefit from what we've discussed. Until the next time, remember that your dreams should be real.